The traders from the Department of Trade and Industry. The traders that are trading with the Martins on the foot, they informed Martins that unless we pay them in 10 days, they are not going to give us our food this month. There was a meeting here before ours, and we were worried that as people leave the meeting, they may then assume that the catering is for them. So Martins, in his wisdom, which I concur with, which I respect and appreciate, decided that he will delay the catering. Let us not start with that business effort. Can I just get an indication from members about the tourism in Dava? Are we all that going to that in Dava okay with the arrangement that has been made for us? I know you don't know exactly what time you'll be picked up on Friday, but I think we'll share that with us once that's in the back. I don't think we've ever had a problem with our transport from here to the airport or from the airport to the venue. So we trust that Martins is
here.
Martins, have your phone on, please?
That's my private device. I must get a new device.
Martins, your argument doesn't hold. It's not for you to call. It's for us to be able to reach you.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I have to take that call.
Yes, you don't believe we're taking your call.
No, sir. I just pick up the phone after all.
No. Martins, if the members wants to get hold of you during working time,
they must.
No, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem reaching my secretaries after hours. Most probably because they have my number and they can see who's calling. I mean, Honorable Vandagan, if you call me as well at 8 and I didn't have your number, the likelihood of me taking your call from an unidentified number after 7 is very thin. At that time, I am watching... No. I'm watching MasterChef.
Oh, okay.
Now I refuse watching MasterChef. Who cried when they announced the winner.
Is my number now listed on your phone?
Definitely, yes. All committee members. Yes, Elsa. No, just Elsa. I wanted to put Dia in front of it, but then... Okay, the food is here. Can we ask members and also for the details? I noticed that in the top time they don't eat it, and I sit here and eat, and I feel terrible. Yesterday, Deputy Minister Kroner was sitting there where he was sitting, and I'm sitting here eating my fruit. I'm diabetic, so I have to eat when I need to eat. But we all are welcome to help us out through the food outside. Let's then settle, say, within 3 minutes, and then we can start the deliberations. Please help yourself. Can I get any indication on when Jimunia said he's not going? Martins, who's going?
There are only 4 members there.
Four. Give me the names again, please. Mr. Father. Okay. Oh, I wanted to say that one person must say, there are 2 people must say, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you. Which meeting will not be later?
Hello members, we want to welcome you to this select committee meeting on trade and international relations. We also want to welcome the DG and the senior staff from the Department of Trade and Industry. I have an apology from Mr. Rob Davis that there is the Momo dilemma, which is the meeting of the cabinet that's happening this morning, and he is in Victoria, but I have a written apology there from him. We also have one other apology. Matthews, who's the apology from?
The father.
Honorable Father. We have one other written apology from Honorable Father. Honorable members, like a good reformed Catholic, we do things in 3 weeks. So the 3 items on our agenda for today is the briefing by DTI on the strategic plan and annual performance plan and budget. And we have had a conversation about the fact that this is only presented to us here. It's not going to go to the House. The second item on our agenda is going to be the briefing on the Marrakesh Agreement, establishing the WTO. And then the third item, which is a final item, would be the consideration and adoption of the minutes, which is going to be a fairly easy one. It was a presentation that was made to us last week, Wednesday, by the Department of Tourism. I have consulted with the DG, Mr. October, and there is agreement that what we do is to start with the budget as well as the strategic and annual performance plan of the department. DG, can I hand to you immediately?
Thanks, Honorable Matthew. We're going to be presenting our annual performance plan, and as indicated, I have with me all the heads of department, the senior management of the DTI with me. At a really high level, I'll take it to 3 things. The one is just to set the economic context, and then to look at the key interventions. Even though it's a 3-year annual performance plan, we've broken it down into the annual targets. And then we'll look at the budget. So I think to say a very few words about the global economic context, I think in broad terms, both IMF and everybody else is saying that there is a slowdown in the global economy. At a broad level, 0.2 percentage points off. This is a result both of monetary tightening in the U.S., as you know, the raised interest rate a few months back, but also the slowdown in China, and then the slowdown in commodities as well. So global demand in 2016 is expected to remain subdued, and I must say that there is some indication that things are easing a little bit now because of the fact that the U.S. will not be raising interest rates immediately, so that has offered some stability. There is a slight pickup over the past few weeks or months in the demand for commodities, but clearly the trend, as I said, remains subdued. As we know, that the low oil prices have had a dual effect. On the one hand, we've seen some of our largest markets on the continent, Nigeria, Angola, having to now go to the IMF for assistance, because they obviously rely on the oil exporting, but on the other hand, it is good for oil importing countries because it's like South Africa, where it reduces our import costs. And this slide just gives you that it's a generalized trend, and as it's for the first time in almost 15 years, growth in sub-Saharan Africa is also declining. the global context is one of that. In terms of if we look at the South African economy, and we look at the last quarters of 2015, you will see that South Africa, the economy grew by 0.7%. And then the good on the positive side was we were saved from a technical recession by manufacturing, which grew at a rate of 6.2%, and then also the services sector grew 8%. So that, in a sense, prevented us from a recession. And then as you see, the other major constraint that we face is the drought, which has affected five provinces. So the slide at the bottom just gives you the trend lines with regards to growth. As we can see, growth is very, very modest at 1% and below 1%.
We're showing you that side too. and apology, Martin, when he got here, he was going to render the apology. That is a technical problem. Page 5, our apology to the department, please, that we have to now do it to the whole way. The understanding was that it prevents us from using the protectionist theory.
I've just finished on my one slide 5.
Just before my issue go along, I'll be able to hold it the presentation.
That's slide 5, I'm now into slide 6, which basically deals with the sectoral performances, that is the different parts of manufacturing. I think in broad terms one can say that there's a really mixed picture in terms of manufacturing, because some sectors are suffering major challenges, especially those that are facing the mining industry and supply the mining industry, and secondly the steel industry, because there's a global glut in steel and it's oversupply in the market globally, and as you can see, we've experienced major problems at Airbus, Middleburg, and even at Intel. But then the positive side is there are a few sectors of manufacturing which are going very well. That is, for example, agro-processing, that is the food and beverages sector, there's chemicals, and then especially what is performing very well is the transport sector, which is basically motor vehicles production, and also light commercial vehicles, buckies, and so on. Then if you see today's paper, you will see that our exports, whilst domestic vehicle sales are down, luckily, there's been massive increase in exports for Toyota, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, and so on. So the three well-performing sectors out of it is agro-processing, chemicals, and transport. But on the other hand, the other sectors are suffering, so therefore, it is a mixed sectoral performance in manufacturing. Again, if we look then just at the performance of jobs, and I'm on slide 7, I'll just give, as I said, even though we are in a depressed economic condition, the economy continues to create jobs. Between quarter 3, 2010 and quarter 3, 2015, 2.1 million jobs are reflected. As I said, people then always ask, if there is so much job growth, how come our unemployment remains? So a problem at 25%. As you know, unemployment is a moving target. Every year, about over 100,000 people enter the labor market. So you don't only have to create jobs for those who are entering the labor market, but you also have to deal with existing unemployed. And therefore, so our sense is that we've had 2.1 million people, jobs being created. There could be over that period, for example, 2 million new people entering the labor market. But as I said, on the whole, the economy is improving. Creating jobs. We've seen job growth in agriculture, in construction and financial services. There's been big job losses in the mining industry, and at least with regards to manufacturing, we can say that there's been a slight improvement, but really in manufacturing, the jobs have stabilized. If we look at our trade performance, again, we're just looking at the quarter of 2015, you can see that the exports have increased to 9.6 billion. You can see there's a growth in the different subsectors, agriculture, mining, and manufacturing. and in monetary terms, exports increased by 4.3 billion. Even though China is still our largest market, the United States is now also emerging as a big market, as the second largest market for South Africa, which is both mining products like precious metals and diamonds and so on, but also more and more manufactured products like your autos and then your agricultural sector and so on. I think we can also see alongside our trade deficit is not changing much because as we export more, we also tend to import more and we then see a growth in imports. This figure on slide 9, we see our trade performance and it gives you basically the imports. The exports is the blue line, the imports is the red, and then the trade balance, that is the difference between export and export. Imports and exports is the green, and that's what we call our balance of trade. And there you can see the trend line is that we are slowly closing the gap between that. But as you said, we always have a problem because we consume more than we produce. And therefore there's a trade gap, a part of industrialization is to produce more and in a sense actually over time produce an export surplus rather than the current deficit. So I'll then turn to the interventions that are indicated. It will be high level interventions for 2016, 2017 will be just for the 1 year, even though there are 3 year targets that are set. Just to remind ourselves what we are. The purpose behind all activities is to create a industrially, globally competitive economy. Then our strategic goals, is, as I said, we see, you will see there's different interventions. Some of it is related to growing and expanding our industrial base, which is the first block, but also we need to expand our exports, our trade, and therefore to build a mutual beneficial regional and global relations. And then most importantly, the biggest constraint on our growth has been our low aggregate demand, and that is because 80% to 90% of the population were excluded from the economy, so broad-based black economic empowerment is absolutely essential. And we can see now, even our biggest growth driver now is the growth of the black middle class. The rest, I think, is our best strategy, and I won't go into that. So our targets are split into the different programs, which is on slide 14, which is the programs of the department, and as you said, they are listed there from administration to international trade, special economic zones. These are all the divisions of the department, and we organize our work around these different themes. I think just to note, then is program 7 and program 8. Basically what has happened, as you know, we had a trade and investment South Africa, which handled both export promotion and investment promotion. Because of the president's call and the 9-point plan that we must create a one-stop shop for investment, what we have done is we have split that program into two. So we now have, let's say, exports in the one division, trade and exports, and then you have investment South Africa, which is headed up here by Eunice. And so that explains the new addition to our program. So we have a new division. We've also then decided that we need to consolidate our work around the continent. The continent is our fastest growing market for our manufactured products. It is over 350 billion rand of exports now to the continent. So it is our big market. And therefore, we are consolidating our bilateral work within TISA. And as I said, we are also, then you will see, creating or have created now the Africa Export Council. So let's take in our key interventions. Then, as you know, our main purpose and our overarching program is the Industrialization Initiative. And there we our annual Industrial Policy Action Plan. Which we release annually, and I can report it has just been adopted by Cabinet after a robust debate. A higher impact industrial policy action plan has been, that's one of our key topics for this year now, and we'll be launching that next week. And there are a number of interesting things you'll see how we are scaling up. And the most important point to make about the new industrial policy action plan will be the focus on labor intensive sectors. So we will, will be big focus on job creation, so we will be targeting big sectors like clothing, textile, footwear, agro processing, light manufacturing, and so on. And then also there will be other things like gas industrialization and so on. The other target we've set is obviously before you can get growth, you must invest, and therefore our incentives, we've set a clear target for that. That is our automotive investment scheme, the 12i tax incentive, the critical infrastructure program, our film incentive, and so on page 60, slide 15. And there we hope to leverage our target, all our incentives together. We hope to leverage in this financial year 20 billion rand of investment from those incentives. Then we'll see another big part of our program is going to be decentralization. And we've initiated a new program, which is 15 strategic infrastructure parks for these new special economic zones and industrial parks, which I will touch on a bit later. Exports, this is for individual. You will see the different parts in which we are assisting companies and entrepreneurs with exports. We have one incentive scheme which focuses on individuals who want to participate in the export market, they want to do research, or they want to participate on their own in the trade mission. We have a facility for them, and they, we hope to generate 800 million of exports for that. We hope to, in terms of the number of jobs we want to create, so this direct jobs from the different programs, 3,600, and to retain about 3,600. We've also put into skills development, and there we are leveraging 100 million. And then for risk financing for innovation, it is 50 million. I want to then turn to the other part that I indicated, the strategic goal. We must be, because of the constrained growth in our domestic market, we need to expand our exports into new markets. So a big emphasis is going to be the African Regional Development Program and the program we have to strengthen the SADC FTA. But in addition to that, in this year, we have to finalize all these agreements. The one would be the Economic Partnership Agreement with the European Union. That agreement is significant because we will be getting, if this is concluded, we'll be getting new market access, for especially for our agriculture and agro-processing products, but especially wine we will be getting, but also we will be, for the first time, be allowed to export sugar into the European Union and a range of other areas. So we have to conclude that, I think the target that Nikki Kruger mentioned was hopefully by October we will conclude the full economic partnership with the EU. The other one is the other big one that we are working on is the tripartite free trade area. That is the agreement between SADC, COMESA, and East Africa Community, and there we hope to also expedite negotiations. This year we had a meeting about a week ago to take stock of the negotiations to see how we can try to get this agreement finalized in this financial year. We also aim to continuously expand our bilateral engagements. The main ones we will be focusing on is the Gulf states. As you can see, there's massive export opportunities, especially for our agricultural and agro-processing products in Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and so on. But also, then we're looking at strategic bilateral engagements, the opening up of Iran, and that market also offers opportunities, so we will continue those things with a focus. Under EMEA, which is the more general export program on slide 19, we want to increase our exports in this year to 3.5 billion. This is where we participate in major pavilions, where we pay for companies to assist them to go and display on big trade fairs and exhibitions, and that is 3.5 billion. And then, as I say, on the investment essay that we launched this year, which is now up and running, and that investment facilitation, our target there is 50 billion rand of foreign direct investment, and there is a clear pipeline which may be in a separate presentation to you. We can give you details of what that investment pipeline, but I can say it's a very healthy pipeline. As you can see, even in this year alone, just since the first few months of this year, we've seen major investments by Ford in Pretoria, 1,200 jobs from Ford. We've seen by Dunlop, we've seen the 2 billion by Nestle, and so on. Then turning to the other B area, which is, as I indicated, creating an inclusive economy. And this is through broadening participation. We want to fully implement this year the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Act and the Code of Good Practice. We are busy aligning all the different sector charters to the main code and issuing the necessary regulations. Also the establishment of the BE Commission. It is now established. So, as I said, it will be implementation of the Act because the new Act gave rise to the BE Commission. We also will be implementing for the first year will be the Black Industrialist Program, which, as I said, we had a target of 100 over the three-year period. So we're setting ourselves the target for the first year because we're getting the systems. The systems have now been set up, the investment forum with other DFIs and so on have just been established, and we are up to 25 new Black Industrialists, of course. We will try to make it more than what we can, but that's not our target. And then as I indicated, we want to revitalize industrial parks in our decentralized or former homeland areas. I think, as I said, unfortunately some people have called these the apartheid era industrial parks, but as I said, these are where significant amounts of people live. And there are a number of companies there, and we need to support investment in those areas. So we made a decision to and then to develop a program to revitalize 10 industrial parks. As I said, we're kicking off with the Eastern Cape in Tata. We've got Bulilela Industrial Heights, which is in the KSD municipality, and in there's Queen Industria. Where we will be moving on those two. In KZN, we will be working on the Isitebe, where, as I said, there's been trouble recently. We're revitalizing that one. But Sabelo, I can announce, has actually been completed already. They've started to redo the roads, lighting, security, and other upgrades. And then Shashecho in the Popo also completed already. We will be launching those ones soon. We're listing all those things, but we will be covering a whole lot from Khankua to Babareki to Dimbaza and quite a few of these industrial parks we will be revitalizing. Then looking at the regulatory side, on slide 22, we, as you know, this is the new regulatory impact assessments, which is called FIAS, Social Economic Impact, and we'll be doing two of these years, and then we'll be doing two evaluation reports for the Consumer Protection Act and the Companies Act. In terms of some of the other bills we will be working on, the one is the two bills, Companies Amendment Act, and then this is a big one for our performers and artists, as you know that they are not getting the best deals. And the Copyright and Performance Protection Act we will be looking at that. Four regulations we will be issuing, liquor companies, gambling, and that copyright. And that is our work in our CCRD revision. Slide 24 is also in terms of creating proper entities, is the National Liquor and Gambling that we will be beefing up and strengthening those institutions. For them. If I then turn to the administration to implement that program, we've set ourselves the target again of our vacancy rate to reduce that from the current 8.2 to 5%. To reduce our staff turnover rate, and then to increase our people with disability we're just under 3%. We will set that to 3.1%. And then, as you know, we've got the target. We are amongst the best performing departments with regards to women in senior management, but we still haven't reached the 50% target, so we're hoping this coming financial year to reach that target of 50%. Again, also the major one, which we is the creditor payments. As we know, small businesses especially rely on doing our payments, and we hope to keep our track record of paying the bulk of our people within 15 days. But definitely 100% must be paid within 30 days. So we wanted to say that record and target and so on. Then obviously the public awareness, and that is listed there. I won't go into those ones. I then turn finally to the budget. You can see there we our budget for the current year is 10.3 billion. Again, as you know, the bulk of our program lies in our industrial development division and our incentive development administration, and that is really where we support manufacturing and productive assets by co-investing or assisting and incentivizing the private sector to undertake domestic production and invest in capital equipment and machinery. And so those ones is 6.9 for the incentive development administration and 1.7 for industrial development. Then of course the others are our other big activities, which is our international division and then trade export. And there you can see now the first budget line, investment South Africa. So that's our budget for this year. I wanted to just very finally on slide 89, which we've added, I don't know if you managed to get this into your presentation, but we just gave a provincial breakdown for the select committee of our incentive programs. As I said, there is now, for the first time, there is a spreading of our incentives to all provinces. And especially with regards to the MCEP program, the Manufacturing Competitive Enhancement Program, where we can see now that at least are seeing attraction in all provinces. But as I said, our economy, our industrial economy is still really concentrated in three centers, obviously Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, the Durban area, and then the Western Cape, the Cape Town and surrounding areas. But as I said, it's also the reason that we're also now working with these industrial parks, where we then, as I said, we're rolling out the program out to really just build up the infrastructure and the basic services for these industrial parks. But we also then move into the next phase with these industrial parks. We will be assisting the companies located in these parks to also then upgrade their equipment, machinery, and so that they can raise their competitiveness and also expand production and get more employment. But some of them are really impressive. We were in Tata at the Olympian Industrial Park. That park is almost 100% full of companies. So it's not a question of having companies or occupancy. It's just a question that we haven't put sufficient amount money into the basic infrastructure for these areas. And then we also go into the other incentives, the film, the business process, outsourcing, and all of our incentives in different provinces on page 30. I conclude, Honourable Chair, by just looking at our key risks. As we know, as part of any strategic planning exercise, you must understand what are the factors which can throw you off course. And our biggest one is obviously that we are vulnerable because we are a very small open economy. Almost 30% of our rely on trade imports and exports, and therefore what happens in the global economy is a big matter. And therefore our inability to penetrate foreign markets is something we watch all the time, and we need to look at that. The second biggest one is really because we are have a growing budget and hope to expand our budget and provide more assistance to the manufacturing sector, we must maintain our zero tolerance of corruption and fraud. So that is our biggest risk. We monitor our audit committee, our internal audit. We monitor very, very closely our incentive programs. As you know, we did receive a clean audit in the previous financial year. We have to try to at least maintain that, but this is our biggest issue, so that people can know that there's integrity in our program. So when we do receive our money, 5.8 billion for incentives, people know that each and every cent goes into productive assets and creates jobs, and therefore that is our biggest risk we monitor. And our reputational risk is obviously, if you're going to provide leadership to your own economy, people must trust the department, that we have no interest other than the country at stake, and therefore our reputational risk must be managed very carefully. So those are the risks we're looking for and we're planning for. And so, as I indicated, we'll be setting up much stronger monitoring system to monitor the global marketplace to see where opportunities are. As I indicated, we've just come back from Iran, we've just come back from visits to Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, and others. There are markets where we can now get export opportunities. We've just been given proper status now to export to Indonesia. We hope to also conclude a protocol for exports to Saudi Arabia and the UAE and the Gulf States. And also we want to now take advantage of the massive opening of the market in Iran, which I think is over 60 million people, and it's a massive, big middle class, and it's been under sanction. So that's what we're doing to try. And then obviously our long-term future is going to depend on the continent. And therefore we are prioritizing all our work on the continent, the creation of the Africa Export Council, the work around the trade agreements and so on. That is our biggest one. Honorable Chair, I think I conclude on that base. Kiyabilota, Kiyabalela, Kiyabonga, and Kosa Kulu. Thank you very much, Lily. We did very well. Because of that? Oh, because of the closing remarks. Honourable members, there we have it. I indicated to the team from DTR that what I'll do is to allow members to be very extensive in our interpretation of the presentation. I'm not sure if I can hold to that promise. But let's throw it to you, honourable members. Are there any questions that you have on the presentation? Seeing that I don't see any hands going up immediately, let me kick off with my questions. Did you? The first one... No. No, I'm giving you a chance to put yours down. My first one would be on the fuel cells and the catalytic converters. Can you give us an indication where we are in terms of production in those two areas? The second one is on slide 16, where you're talking about the private sector investment of 20 billion. We, as you've mentioned it, it is sort of in passing, the investments that is happened by Ford, by Nestle, by BMW. Maybe if it is fair to request that you provide to us, not in the meeting, but later on, just an indication over the last year, say we start from March last year up until March this year, or however your term works, what were the companies that invested in South Africa and what is the value of that investment? My third question, which is my final one, is on an experience that we had in our oversight. Honourable Ntebe, you have to help me again with the name of this place, but it was just outside of Monterey, where we visited an industrial park there. Mokwasi. We're not asking you to go there and make a big investment, but to look at what's happening there. I think there's great potential. There were two products that I picked up there. One is that they have this compressed wood that they're using as charcoal. I see the same product is coming from Somerset West as well. But the people who are manufacturing them are struggling to get market access. That's the one. The second one was that there were older people that were producing fruit juices. There was one building on their site. It's a massive steel structure. They're standing there. Nobody's using it for two reasons. The one is because their businesses are so small, they can't get into that big building. But it might be helpful if even experts get in there and help them to say, what is it? Because the structure is there. And there's an industrial park much more organized immediately adjacent to that. But if we are talking about creating black industrialists, then that might be something. So I just wanted to leave that three. Honorable Van Millen, I've noticed you. Honorable Njimunya after that, and then we'll give an opportunity for response. Please, Honorable Van Millen.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've read that the Chinese car investment is coming to the Eastern Cape, and I would like some more details on that as to its exact location. And then the private sector investment was one of my questions. On slide 18, you referred to the fact that we are now also exporting sugar to the EU. Now, normally, trade agreements like that sort of come in an exchange situation. So for us to be able to export sugar, what other agreements or what are we accepting in exchange for the right to be able to export sugar? Then this year, I understood from a statement, the executive statement made by Minister Gordhan, that on all legislation we will now have to have the socio-economic impact assessment. So my question is this part of that project? And are you playing a leading role, or are all the departments following through with that decision? And then on page 32, you are referring to your energy efficiency program. And I must say, I take my hat off to you, because I know of a number of engineers that you have sent to the Eastern Cape to speak to the motor industry and help all those, not even the main producers, but the company feeding into them. Yeah, you have gone to them to assist them in supporting energy efficient program. Now yesterday I raised a similar thing in my energy speech, because an ordinary retailer, a food retailer in Newmanstorp, managed to retain its energy cost at 360,000 over a 4-year period by introducing 12.5% solar energy, and the other one who didn't do it on the same demand basis of electricity had the electricity bill at the end of 4 years of R1 million, and they had to close down because the electricity was too expensive. So I asked the minister, can we please do something about low voltage connections so that when they reduce the energy, we bring in low voltage. She was talking about small-scale embedded generation for medium voltage. This is a low voltage thing. And can we not finalize that legislation? Or can you not whisper in a ear? Because that's part of the energy saving thing. It's just to get the connection, if you understand what I'm saying. And if we can get that connection, we can bring great relief in local municipalities.
Thank you, Honourable Timonia. Let me just repeat, I see you have a new department, so they may not know where the members are. Not the department, staff in this department. I'm from Gauteng. Honourable Lennon is from Eastern Cape. Honourable Timonia is from Mpumalanga.
Thank you, Chairperson. I always ask you that you know this thing of drought that has hit us from last year. and we've started to bear the cost from last year. I always ask that we are taken for full CATG. How does the impact of the drought affect us with immediate effect in 2015 when we had positive yields over the year prior to 2015? I feel we are taken for a ride by the market out there, and I want to understand out of your program, in your program of revitalization of the former homeland industry, it is not time we began to switch, especially basic foodstuffs, that those are produced by cooperatives as opposed to your commercial organizations or companies in the private sector. We learned from the UCPG, you are with me, that the economy of India was grown on the back of cooperatives the industry. How about beginning to strategize along those lines that will revitalize business from our own industries? I know for the first thing, the Homa Wanderland, you had bakeries that were producing bread there, you had daily product companies, small companies that are black gold. That thing went down because they were not, among other things, because they were not competitive to the big industries of them. But among other things, they did not get support from the then homeland government, and they even went down completely when we took over as the new administration in 1994. Should we not be beginning to think along those lines in our planning and strategizing of giving this business as we talk about to cooperatives? Hyper India has gone down. What is in your plans about it? Are you planning to rescue India? That a massive jobs have been lost today, and you are still losing jobs. Those are my two questions.
Thank you very much. Let's give over to TJ Actors.
Honorable Chair, I'm going to also then hand over to my colleagues to deal with the detail of some of the questions, including the last one, especially on the steel industry. Honorable Chair, on your first few questions, certainly with regards to, thanks for that, we will, Mukhwasi, we will give that to our division. Super Recorders division, and we'll send the team out there to go and look at that. But there's been, and we can then make an assessment in addition to the helping those two companies. We'll see if we can work around the industrial park as well and make an assessment of that. But thanks for that. We'll also forward you the full list then of the 2015-2016 investments. We'll list them and then give the amounts and so on. And then with regards to the fuel cells and the catalytic converters, let me just say that there, as I said, there's two parts to it. The one is we've the catalytic converter industry is the one we've had, right? And we were starting to make about 10% of world reduction with regards to catalytic converter, and that is what part of the automotive industry program we're keeping that industry going and so on. But the new area is that all of our focus now is on the fuel cells. Where are we now? As you know, the first thing was we needed to create demand for this product, for people to use fuel cell as a way of generating electricity. So our first product, if you recall what we came about 2 years ago, we financed the back entrepreneur to build the fuel cell at the Chamber of Mines. So currently the Chamber of Mines is being powered by fuel cells. So we wanted that to have a demonstration effect to show the mining houses that we can add value and beneficiate the platform which they just export to Japan and Europe. So we said you can see it can power your own offices. And immediately after that then, when the minister launched that program, the companies themselves could see how it worked and Implex decided to cooperate with us. So currently we are very working on a program to ensure that we start building the stacks for these fuel cells. So Implant is going to be using fuel cells to power the mine in Springs. And therefore we're going to be extending part of the Houteng, the Howard Tambo IDZ, which will then be producing the first fuel cell stacks for that. And as I said, there's another initiative which is under the incentive program where we try to help another company, Sando. One of our colleagues from DTI also accompanying them on the trip to Japan. to see if we can get them to make some investment in country and transfer some technologies for us to start moving into this fuel cell area. And then the Department of Science and Technology is also running a very big program which they've been running at universities, ISA, called ISA, which is hydrogen in South Africa, which is basically the hydrogen generated from fuel cells. So that is where we are, but as I said, it is an infant industry, but we see that as our major product for beneficiation, fuel cells and adding value to platinum is our biggest our one. On the 1 million, I think the investment you're talking about is the Beijing Automotive Works, which is BAW investment. Eunice can talk a bit more about that, that one is, they are still busy completing the full feasibility studies because the IDC is also going to be a big investor in that. As I said, initial ideas, and maybe you just have a bit more on that, we can look at that. And then CIAS, the environmental impact assessment, I think McDonald can just maybe comment on that program. And then as I said, you can know, as I said, our national cleaner production and other things around the emissions work. Maybe one of our colleagues can just look at that one of the energy issue. And then Honorable M.P. Mounier, I think yes, I think you're absolutely right that we must, as I said, production in the former homeland areas or by African farmers that have been and industries that have been obviously suppressed and so on. As I said, unfortunately we left this thing also now for the past 20 years. We haven't invested in these areas. So as I said, we have received a budget of 118 billion for us to start reviving these former homeland areas. We can at least, the Rustenburg government is also now catching on to this program. Minister Khadebe in the presidency, COPTA, others have all expressed strong support for this program. So I think we can now start putting together that program where we can start revising all those industries, cooperatives. But as I said, we think that especially food, and you're right, food and agricultural production is the one part of manufacturing which is growing. And that's why you see those big investments by Nestle and Unilever is actually food products that is making that is the part of manufacturing growing. So I think it's definitely potential there. As you know, we've also just signed with Economic Development and the Competition Commission on the SA Breweries InBev merger buyout. Their big part is going to be we've attached a condition that they must actually expand domestic production of barley and for those, I think. So there is going to be bigger market opportunities for people in the agricultural space. And I'll ask Garth if you could maybe just comment on Highveld Steel. But we are taking a number of measures, have taken and are processing, but we definitely we have put up tariffs already. We've got more in the pipeline, but Garth could expand on the steel industry, which I think is a major problem because the entire economy in that area, Middleburg area, revolves around that Highveld steel. McDonald?
No, thank you, DG. Chairperson and the honorable members. The issue of CS actually started some 4 or 5 years ago. It used to be referred to as regulatory impact assessment. But cabinet took a decision that now it's not enough for me to look at the regulatory impact assessment benefits outweighing the cost to the entire socio-economic impact assessment, and then that's what has been happening. And then all the DTI legislation for the past four or five years we've been doing this. It was a pilot project of cabinet by DTI, Finance Department, and then the President. So now it is being rolled out to other departments. But all in all is that within the DTI we are saying we are going to change gambling legislation, copyright legislation. Therefore, they should be serious performed to assist us in the impact assessment, what will be the impact, the cost being the implementation part of it. And I think we are in harmony with the Minister of Finance as alluded to. Thank you.
Thank you. The question on the National Clean Production Center, we support a number of programs which are run out of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. I think the two biggest ones are the Technology Localization Unit, which supports companies to raise the technology in key supply chains, including benchmarking of competitiveness of companies in the value chain. And then the second one is the National Cleaner Production Center, which has CSIR engineers working with companies across all the sectors to ensure their cleaner production and less energy intensive production methodologies are taken on board. I don't have all the data with me today, but we can provide details of which companies have been assisted. I think it's somewhere in the region of 140, and we can also provide data on the savings both to the companies as well as to the national economy with respect to energy savings. With respect to steel, today's announcement by the American government might give you a perspective on how deep the problem is. The American government has put in place not only anti-dumping but tariff measures, and they've just made an appeal to the ITAC for a total ban on imported Chinese steel. Basically the problem, as honourable members may know, is that because of the recession in particular, and because of the fact that there's enormous installed capacity, particularly in China, there's a cut in the steel market, and a range of steel products are being imported into South Africa at less than the cost of production in South African companies. So this is, in summary, the nature of the problem. As the DG has said, it's critical that we don't lose our primary steel production capabilities, which exist in the form of the main steel producer, ArcelorMittal, some of the secondary steel producers, which include Everest, Highveld, Cape Gate, Score Metal, and then there are the so-called re-rollers, which add value, Sunbelt Steel, and so on and so forth. So these steel producers are under enormous pressure in the face of a very cheap steel imports. One of those companies that's under enormous pressure is Everest Highveld. IBC is a shareholder in Everest Highveld, so it doesn't fall directly under the DTI. It falls, in fact, under the IBC and EDB. Nevertheless, we have taken a very keen interest. The central problem is that the cost of producing steel, and forgive me if I get this wrong, but it's magnetite. In other words, it's both iron ore and vanadium and titanium in the process. There has been a lack of capital investment over the years, unfortunately, into that project, and it became loss-making to the extent that it went into business rescue. We have been working closely with the business rescue practitioners and the IBC in an effort to bring in a new investor. there are very big contingent liabilities, and that includes a $1.5 billion contingent liability because of the fact that the dumps, which by the way contain high levels of titanium and vanadium, are a contingent liability to the Department of Environmental Affairs, but they also have a significant asset. So the question is to secure a private investor who can work with the IBC to get new capital equipment into the plant to deal with the contingent liabilities and lower the cost of production and then continue to produce steel for the domestic market in conditions where there's this incredible steel crisis caused by the global floods, which I have explained. We have put the problem of trying to save Edward Heartfelt in the same basket of work that an interdepartmental task team on iron and steel is working on, and that includes working closely with ArcelorMittal. We have increased tariffs, applying the bound rate, which is an increase for 10 steel products by 10%. We have also are in the process of removing the deeming clause for steel in the designation of steel-intensive products. We are very concerned that the downstream steel-intensive manufacturers could suffer from an increase in steel prices. Although tariff increases aren't alone the cause of steel price increases, there are other factors to take into account, which include higher electricity prices and the fact that some of our steel producers have to import coking coal for steel production in South Africa because South Africa doesn't have coking coal, which is used in the steel production process. Chairperson, this is a very, very long story. I could go on about it in a lot more detail. In the interest of time, I'll stop there, but we'd be very happy to give a much more detailed briefing on the work which is being guided by Mr. Davies and Mr. Patel and the two DGs in question to save both our primary steel producers as well as the downstream steel intensive manufacturing sectors. It's a very complicated piece of work in the context of the global steel crisis.
Thank you, Mr. Strachan.
Finally, then, it's Judith on the BAW. We will also deal with the question on whether we could make vulnerable, but then this question about interacting with the Department of Energy and DPE on the question of the voltages.
Thank you, honorable members. I think maybe the BAIC investment, I think, was signed during the state visit in December, by the Chinese president visit to South Africa. What it is, BAIC is 24 plants globally, and they are still in Africa. They already have a plant in Spain with trans minibuses, employing 500 people, and one in Kenya. So they've taken a decision to make get closer to market and chosen South Africa as the biggest manufacturing location on the continent, and this will be the by far the single largest manufacturing investment by a Chinese company in in Africa. So the BAIC plant is the feasibility. IDC and BAIC signed the concluded feasibility lottery, signed the feasibility lottery for to produce 100,000 vehicles and passenger SUV and minibuses, basically to break ground next month to start production in November 2017 and to be ready in 2018. So that's how fast the project is. The site selected is between Israel and PE. One of the two
sites.
Kuha, yeah. The two sites is going to Kuha in PE, so you'll be very happy.
Yeah.
So basically it will create 2,500 jobs and 10,500 indirect jobs. But more specifically, it's not only about the production of the vehicle, it's also the production of parts, which is a real, it fits into the supply chain because about 50% of the production is going to be exported. Domestic and in South Africa, then in markets like Ghana, Ethiopia, Angola, and Kenya. So it's a project, I think, that is now, the feasibilities are almost concluded and it seems to be given the go-ahead. The time frame, as I said, is breaking down next month and starting production in November 2017. Yeah. And just to add, as you, what DJ has said, that we created, the president has created the and asked for the intergovernmental clearinghouse, and the intergovernmental clearinghouse is what we are leading in intergovernmentally as a one-stop shop. So working, for example, in the with the IDP office and the RDIPP program on the, as well as with the gas limit on the localization of components and looking at energy efficiency. These are what we're working as task teams in government departments to produce, to look at more innovative, more sustainable development and more clean tech industries. For example, you know that we're positioning Atlantis as a green tech sustainability hub. So these are some of the things that we're working on, also together with the Department of Science and Technology.
Okay, so we will then take up that issue with our discussions with in the energy class as we've been doing in the case. Chair, I think that covers the bulk of the question.
There's one question on the EU green and the sugar.
What was the trade-off? What was the quid pro quo? It's like the goal one where we had to give chickens for cars and wines, we had to give chickens. So on the EU one, I think Nikki can explain this one, which I think was much more good for us. We didn't have to give any chickens.
Thank you, DGT. In terms of the trade-offs, we had to give some additional market access in agricultural products, but it was very limited. It was mostly on some lines where the duty is zero currently, and it's been zero for many years. We agreed that we will keep, for the EU, we will keep those duties at zero. But in the future, if we want to increase, we will not be able to do it vis-a-vis the EU. It's on some agricultural products, and then on a limited number, about 11 tariff lines, we agreed on a quota for the EU where they would be able to import duty-free. It's on products like wheat, thick fats, and so forth. This has been agreed with industry. We had intensive consultations. And then the biggest trade-off, of course, was GI. So instead of giving additional market access, the EU had a long list of additional requests. We agreed to negotiate GI. So in the end, we agreed to protect 253 GI names of the EU, but the EU in return also agreed to protect 105 GI names for South Africa, including Rooibos, Honeyboost, and Kulam. So in short, DG, that was the thing.
Thank you very much. But when I'm just looking at our time, I would request that we who have raised questions already give the other members an opportunity, and then I'll push the other members in terms of the number of questions that you could raise. I see that Honourable Lont is raised. Honourable Dihale, did you want to raise it? Honourable Dihale. Honourable Lisa, are you okay? You happy with the BAIC coming to... Honourable Lodge would be the next. He is from the Western Cape, and he will be followed by Honourable Dihale from Limpopo.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Chair, this thing popped up during our recent registration draft that a lot of voters, their ID numbers are kept back by lenders or loan sharks, whatever you want to call them. And with this difficult economic period we are in now, there's a lot more of them springing up. and I'm just worried about how are we effectively monitoring that market, and do we have enough resources available to the NSAR to make sure that during this difficult period there's no unscrupulous lending that will unscrupulous lending that's taking place, because it will not necessarily have an impact now, but it will have an impact going forward into next year and even the year after that. So what are you doing just to ensure that that industry is not making unnecessary use of this economic climate we're in now, please?
Thank you very much, Christian. Let me thank the DG for the presentation. Thank you very much. I just wish that I was one of those who are staying next to the hub, but unfortunately, we don't have a sea in Limpopo. We don't even have a river.
No.
Nothing. No. Okay, so I just wanted to check, besides the artifacts, what is it that is coming on our way to Limpopo? I know that for us to have an opportunity that the PE people are having, people always talk about being next to the harbor, because even the delivery of the part of the cars won't be a problem. But Limpopo is not there. I think we also deserve one. And the other thing, only revitalization of the industrial parks. I know you're done with phase one of the implementation, but I just want to check how far are you with the other phase. And only 1 million jobs that will be created. We don't have the statistics here, but I think if we can get as to how many jobs went to each province. You can start with Limpopo or mention Limpopo a lot, that's no problem. On the job losses in mining, what is it that is happening? What are we doing in order to help people to regain their jobs? I know even if on some of the other issues have been disadvantaged, but we have money in Limpopo, especially on that side of the cocoon. And I know the people are suffering, they're not getting help. They are not aging there, so how can we help them? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Bless you, Honourable Chair, thanks. Honourable Lant, question, yes, I think we actually just come from a presentation yesterday and this morning. We had the NCR right here to present, you're right. The question of over indebtedness is and reckless lending is growing, and I think the statistics saying now is about 41%, 42% of over indebtedness. That is people with more than 3 months in arrears or with a credit a listing and so on. So our problem is serious, you're right. The response is twofold. One is we are going to expand the powers of the NCR to be able to be more proactive in terms of raids and in terms of proactively going into offices. Because currently you have to get in there, there must be a reasonable suspicion that there is reckless lending going on, and so on, and then you can intervene, and so on. Now we want to give much more powers to the NCR to be able to proactively raid and to check on whether proper lending is being done and the people's ID cards and so on are being seized and so on. The second one I was going to share, which I think we'll probably be doing a whole presentation in some detail again, to take over the discussion about, it looks like we're going to have to deal with some level of debt forgiveness for people, at least for certain categories of people who are indebted through no fault of their own. Like, for example, the question of people who have been retrenched, in the steel sector or in the mining industry, and so on. But that is the question which the portfolio committee has requested that the NCR undertake a international study and then, or I mean, to just do a scan what other countries have done and what is possible in South Africa. But it looks like it is a major problem, and many other people have moved proactively to assist certain categories of debtors that are doing it. So it's a two-pronged strategy. And then we will also be providing in additional resources to NCR. I think fortunately this is a global phenomenon, and Treasury is also well aware that this issue is going to mean a well-regulated financial system if we are going to get growth. And then if I then turn to Honorable Tihali's point, I think I'm pleased to report to you that the second most beautiful province of Limpopo, after the Western Cape, obviously, is another beautiful province which I admit is Limpopo. We are doing work on the Bosina IDZ. That IDZ is actually now our top priority. The feasibility study has been completed. They just 2 weeks ago they completed the public consultations. So the IDZ board is seized with that, and they, Yunus and others have been working with the Chinese consortium who are going to make a very major investment in that area, and we're going to be creating an energy and metallurgical cluster in Limpopo. Already the company, as God mentioned, we don't have coking coal. We just have this coal for Eskom and so on. But now they bought the mines and they've discovered the coking coal in Limpopo. So they will be starting with them, but there's a big, big investment in that cluster that will be taking place. I think hopefully in the next 2 to 3 months, the project will be declared IDZ. The province has been to China a few times, our teams have been to China a few times. The MOU was again signed when the president of China was down here, so there's a big support. So we hope to make that matter. Then we want to open the gateway, because as I said, it opens up massive markets. While you don't have an international water port, that is the gateway to the rest of the continent. So we're also going to be including the Bay Bridge expansion as one of the other big projects which we will be tabling to China as one of the investments, is to basically open that transport corridor for exports from that area. I think those are, I don't know, maybe McDonald could just add a bit on the question of the credit problem, which Honourable Lund.
No, thank you. Honourable Member, is that as you may know, we used to register credit providers with say 100 credit agreements. As for now, the Minister has approved regulation, and they are going to be published by us. So the threshold, any person who then provides credit from zero to infinite, we have to be registered with the NPR. And therefore the NPR will be enforcing vigorously any misconduct, what we call code of good conduct, and therefore we will also go on a drive education and awareness to the Macedonians. That's the message. The staff, police services, staff, ourselves, as well as the FSP, ourselves and the NPR, will have joint programs on enforcement so that all these credit providers should be well regulated.
Thank you very much. Thank you, DG. Masuda, you shot yourself in the foot by letting go of this one first. So I'm going to have to put you under pressure with the presentation that you have to do for us in the Marrakesh agreement. can I, while you're getting ready, just make two comments? The one is to say, Honourable Utimune, the question that you're raising about steel, as Mr. Strachan has said, it's a very complicated issue, so we will continue to be of support in helping to understand that. I mean, we can, Mr. Strachan wouldn't mind if you try from Kumalanga, visit him in the office in Pretoria, to have a further briefing with you on that. But also, there's been a lot of discussion that the portfolio committee has had with the steel producers. And you can, from the chairperson of the portfolio committee, get a little bit more feedback on what has happened in that discussion that they had. If you, for example, talking about the rescue and job losses, there are some clear positions that the minister has been advised to take based on the conversations that have happened with the steel producers. This one, the final one, Honourable Zikhale, the point that you're raising about the job losses in Sekakuni and the mining, there are opinions that says that don't go the route of mining because you would have environmental degradation, no repairs happening. There are some civil society organizations have also looked at the mines there and saying that there are no respect for the rights of workers in those mines. If we look, for example, at what has happened at Lily Mine, not that the right of workers were not respected there, but if the mining company doesn't apply safety standards, you can have serious problems happening. And the Department of Minerals and Energy, I do know, has done a lot of work in terms of looking at the job losses at one level, but also looking at the environmental consequences. And with St. Popo, the DG talks about the beauty of the province. I just spent this weekend in Wombas and I have experienced one part of the beauty. We go to Nyambandele and other places like it, you see the other part. But to say that we have to be very, very thoughtful when we look at the money industry. And the problems that we, for example, picking in Mpumalanga now, is that coal is burning underground and nobody takes responsibility for it. In my own constituency, on the M2 highway, we have water stops. Osmond, which is a middle-class area, is suffering from serious water that's locked in the community. Two churches and a mosque because of mining that has happened on the other side of the highway. And I mean, so the question of mining is not something that we have sufficient knowledge on, but to say that we can also then give the solution to set up a meeting with our colleagues in the Minerals and Energy Portfolio Committee to brief us a little bit more on that. Okay, we will talk further about this later. Ms. Kruger, are you happy? Are you ready for us?
Yeah, I'm ready. If my colleague wants to leave, it's a very boring subject. I wasn't feeling this.
They're supposed to give you support. Thank you very much to the members, sorry, to the staff from, who is coming in? Oh, okay. This is why. So now you know who your friend is. Thank you very much for your contribution. It was helpful by now understanding. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to be really, really quick. This is a presentation on the protocol amending the Marrakesh Agreement establishing the World Trade Organization by including Annex 1A on the Agreement on Trade Facilitation. I will cover the provisions of the Trade Facilitation Agreement, Section 2 that deals with special and differential treatment, additional flexibility that was provided for developing and developing, developing countries in the agreement, the time frame for implementation, and then the state of play in South Africa. The trade facilitation was raised for the first time at the Singapore Ministerial Council meeting in 1996. And at that conference, the ministers gave the committee instructions to start looking at race exploitation and to do some work. This took a number of years of exploratory work, and then in July 2004 finally there was an agreement by all the members of the WTO to start negotiating state facilitation as part of the lower round of negotiations. The July 2004 mandate was very clear to negotiators that what they need to focus on is to clarify and improve the articles in the General Agreement on Tax and Trade in the WTO that deals with customs and tax facilitation issues. That was Article 5 that dealt with freedom of conscience, Article 8 that dealt with fees on formality connected with importation and exportation, and Article 10 that dealt with publication and administration of trade relations. The further instruction was that also to look at enhancing technical assistance and capacity building on trade facilitation to developing countries and least developing countries, and to improve effective cooperation between customs and other appropriate authorities on trade facilitation and customs compliance issues. It was also agreed that the result of the negotiations must fully take into account the principle of sectional and differential treatment for developing and least developed countries. In terms of the agreement itself that was finally reached in 2016, the structure of the agreement is that it's divided into sections. Section 1 deals with the specific commitments in terms of trade facilitation disciplines. So in terms of the three articles that were supposed to be clarified, that Article 5 that deals with transparency and appeal, Article 1 to Article 5 in the Trade Facilitation Agreement gives more clarity on what specific the commitment is of the countries in terms of this. And then in terms of Article 8 that deals with import, export and transit fees and formalities, Article 6 to Article 10 further clarify the commitments of countries in terms of this provision, and then Article 11 of the provision of trade facilitation agreement deals with freedom of goods in transit. Then the Section 1 also deals with Article 12 that provides for customs cooperation. South Africa and India were the proponents in this article, so it was something that we focused on to enhance customs cooperation between the different customs authorities to also be able to deal with some of the issues like fraud that we are confronted with in South Africa. Article 13 under Part 1 deals with institutional arrangements, and in terms of this article, each country is committing to set up a national committee on trade facilitation, and there's also a trade facilitation committee that has been established in the WTO that will deal with the implementation of the trade facilitation agreement. Then Section 2 of the trade facilitation agreement deals with special and differential treatment. As I said in the beginning, this is something, a specific instruction that was given by the ministers that the negotiations should fully take into account the needs of developing and developed countries and the special and differential treatment that must be provided. So Section 2 then sets out what the special and differential provision is for the developing and least developed countries. In terms of this provision, the provisions in Section 2, developing and least developed countries are able to categorize their commitments that is set out in Section 1 of the agreement. South Africa is a developing country, so therefore this is the process that we will go through. We need to look at all of the provisions in Section 1 and then see which provisions you will be able to implement after entering into force of the agreement. That should be your Category A commitments. So you will be notified to the WTO that these commitments in Section 1 you are able to implement at the entry into force of the agreement, so those are your Category A commitments. Then, if you are least developed countries, like any countries in Africa, you are able to implement these agreements, of these commitments that you notify under Category A within a year after the entry into force of the agreement. Then, developed countries have to implement all of their commitments in Section 1 at the entry into force of the agreement. Then Category B those are the commitments that you are able to implement, but you are not able to do it now. So you need to make some legislative changes, or you need to put some other organizational procedures in place. So you'll need a year or 2 or 5 years to be able to implement those commitments. Then you are able to notify those commitments under Category B to the WTO, saying that you're going to need 5 years to implement this specific, or 6 years, or however long, you're going to need to implement these commitments, that you are able to do it yourself. You just have to go through some processes internally. Then Category C are those commitments that you are not able to implement yourself. You only will be able to implement it if you are given some support for capacity building and other assistance. So you need, for example, you need money to implement a system for in terms of electronic the electronic admittance of information. In that instance, you will notify those commitments under Category C, and you will identify clearly what is the requirement, the assistance that you require. And then only after you require those specific assistance will you be required then to implement those obligations. So for developing countries and least developed countries, the three categories would be applicable. For South Africa, we are able to implement most of the commitments in Section 1 under Category A. There are some of the commitments that we only will be able to implement under Category B, because there are some legislative changes that is necessary to be able to make to implement those. But it's not foreseen that we will be needing Category C for any of the commitments. A further special and differential treatment that was provided for in Section 2 is an early warning mechanism. So if a developing country or least developed country experience difficulties in implementing its commitments under Category B or C, you are able to notify the Trade Facilitation Agreement in the WTO, saying that this is a problem and you need additional time. For a developing country, you need to do this no later than 120 days before the implementation date, as you have notified it in your Category B or C notification. And if you are an LDC, then by no later than 90 days before the specific date that you've indicated for implementation. You have to, in this notification to the WTO, you have to indicate the reasons for the delay, and you have to provide a new date for implementation. For developing countries, it can be no longer than 18 months after the initial date that is notified. And for an LDC, you have 3 years. You can an additional 3 years. The provision has been made for an automatic extension at your first request. But if you request a longer period than the 18 months for a developing country, or 3 years for an LDC, then the Trade Facilitation Agreement would have to consider this. And then if it's your second or third extension, then it's not automatic again. The Trade Facilitation Committee will consider, and they will have an expert group that will be appointed that will look at the reasons that you've provided, and then make a decision whether any extension can be granted or not. A further special differential treatment provision that has been agreed was category shifting. So if you have, as a developing country or least developed country, notified any of the commitments under Category B or C, you are able to shift between the categories. So you can notify the Trade Facilitation Agreement, that you want to shift commitments under Category B to Category C, because now you realize you need some assistance from outside the country. Or maybe if it was under Category C, you can say, well, we are able to implement it ourselves. We don't need any capacity building or other assistance, technical assistance. We are now shifting it to Category B. So those are the specific provisions for developing and least developing countries. And also in terms of the settlement, there is a specific agreement that there would be a grace period that will be provided for developing countries and least developed countries. So if you are a developing country, no country can take you on dispute settlement under the WTO for a period of 2 years after the implementation of the agreement, in terms of your category A commitment. And then if you are an LEC, then the grace period of 6 years, during which no country can take you on dispute in WTO about the implementation of your category A commitment. And in terms of LECs for category B and C, there's a grace period of 8 years. In which no country would be able to take you on the field. So that in short say is the agreement itself and what it covers. Then there are time frames in terms of the implementation of the trade facilitation agreement. As I mentioned in the beginning, the trade facilitation agreement was concluded in Bali in December 2013, and it was approved by the ministers as part of the so-called Bali package. The ministers also agreed they mandated the development and adoption of a protocol of amendment to insert the trade facilitation agreement into Annex 1 of the Marrakesh Agreement establishing the WTO. So after the decision was taken in December, from January to April 2014, there was a legal review taking place of the trade facilitation agreement to make sure everything is in place. And also the protocol of amendments was drafted and agreed between the members in the committee. It was then submitted in July to the General Council for acceptance, the protocol amending the Marrakesh Agreement, but India blocked the adoption of the protocol due to issues surrounding the public stockholding program. And what an agreement was reached on how to deal with the public stockholding programs of India. In November 2014, the protocol was finally adopted by the General Council of the WTO, and it was open for acceptance. So members can now deposit the instruments of acceptance of the agreement. And in terms of the WTO provisions, the trade facilitation agreement will enter into force once two-thirds of the WTO members have ratified the agreement and deposited their instruments of acceptance of the protocol. There is currently 162 members of the WTO, meaning 108 members need to adopt the needs to ratify the trade facilitation agreement and deposit their instruments of acceptance before the agreement will enter into force. Currently, 77 members have notified the acceptance of the WTO agreement, of the trade facilitation agreement. Countries, it was also started by the ministers in Bali, the countries need to notify the category A commitments to the WTO as soon as possible. And currently, 83 members have notified the category A commitments already to the WTO. South Africa has not yet done that, but we will do it shortly, and I'll get to that soon. Then in terms of the state of play in South Africa, South Africa emphasized that consideration must be given to the impact of the trade facilitation agreement on regional integration in Africa. And this is something that we are currently working on at the African Union. There's a program on this, and we also, together with our partners in SOCU, as you know, we're part of the Customs Union, the Southern African Customs Union, we are looking at the implementation of the trade facilitation agreement also as a customs union. So we've also established the interdepartmental working group with all the relevant departments as part of that. And that interdepartmental working group has developed a list of South Africa's category A commitments and also the terms of reference for the establishment of South Africa's National Trade Facilitation Committee. The agreement was also submitted for legal opinions by both the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and the Department of International Relations to make sure that it's in line with South Africa's domestic legal provisions as well as our international legal obligations. The agreement was then submitted to Cabinet for approval, and Cabinet, of course, approved it to be submitted for ratification to Parliament. The Cabinet also approved the establishment of the National Trade Facilitation Committee of South Africa that will be co-chaired by the Department of Trade and Industry and the South African Revenue Service. And the first meeting of the National Committee on Trade Facilitation will take place on Friday, where we will finalize the Category A commitments for South Africa for submission to the WTO. The protocol of amendment has been approved already by the National Assembly in March 2016, and the final step is now approval by the NCLB. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sugar. Do we have any questions, comments on the CFA? And well, enjoy that. Honourable members, it's self-explanatory. Oh, no, tell you what, just to say something.
I think the presentation was quite good, and Honourable Long got nothing to say. but to what extent, I don't think we can treat this agreement in isolation to all other agreements that we have, and our intention in terms of our Agenda 2063. To what extent is it speaking to that? To what extent are we able to make sure that all our future, because I know that already the cabinet has the coordinating team set up, approved and all that, National Assembly, but I would want to be more speaking about your East Africa, South Africa kind of a trade relationship being opened up. I know that we've been having recently the discussion about how these trade agreements, the responsibility of South Africa on the circle as a whole, and how EU would want us to remove our palm from the circle, all those things. I think you understand where I'm coming from. I don't want to sound too political. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chief. That is, of course, that's very important, and that's why I said that South Africa emphasized from the beginning when you discussed the trade facilitation agreement that it's really important that it's implemented in such a way that it enhances the regional integration in Africa. And that's why we're discussing it not only domestically or in SAHU, but also in the African Union. The provisions of the trade facilitation agreement is very general. It deals with border procedures, and most of it has been taken from the World Customs Organization, where it's already, it's not binding, but where they already set out, model agreements in terms of trade facilitation. So this is the general overview, so the minimum standards, if you can say, that everyone should agree to as part of the WTO. But then in Africa itself, as part of the tripartite negotiations that the DG referred to, we have specific provisions in terms of trade facilitation in between COMESA, SADC and the EAC. And it will also be something specific that we're going to focus on in the continental free trade agreement negotiations that have been launched recently. How we can facilitate trade in Africa. Because what we want these agreements to do is to benefit trade in Africa and not to benefit trade from outside of Africa. And that should be the focus, I think. Thank you, Chief. So we hope it will all, it should all work together and complement one another. Thank you.
Thank you very much. When you mentioned the borders, I mean, I am always very happy when they capture huge amounts of trucks. And I think it's a little cooperation, information sharing between different countries and their borders. There was a person who arrived at the airport in Cape Town yesterday. She had a bag that had chocolates in it. And interestingly, it was a white chocolate. And the officials at the airport requested her to produce a receipt for the items in the bag. And she stubbornly refused. They then opened the bag and found cocaine.
worth 1.5 million. And whenever this happens, I says, what? We must get them all. So with these trade agreements, we can also have that cooperation on the border control and things like that. And as I have proposed at one time, members, one day we should go there to the port in Cape Town to just look at the technologies that they're using when huge ships come in and how they scan all those big containers. You know, that you don't have to open container door anymore to see what's in there. They can scan it and the computer captures whatever is in there. And you have an intelligent person, not someone like me, sitting in front of the computer. They can then quickly also tell you if there's anything suspicious in the cargo. Border control is very important also for us in the southern African region, because we wouldn't want things to come in on a flight to South Africa and then get transported by road illegally to any one of our neighbor countries, affecting their tariffs. So all these type of things would be made easier for us through this legislation. Therefore, honorable members, I will follow what I need to do, honorable Ntebe, and say that the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the protocol amending the Marrakesh agreements establishing the World Trade Organization, including Annex 1 on the Agreement on Trade Facilitation and the establishment of the National Committee on Trade Facilitation, recommends that the Council, which is the NCOP, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Anybody against that? Can we have a proposal that we present this to the NCOP? Honorable Dihale has our proposals. I second. Honorable Ntebe seconds. Thank you very much. No dissenting voice, I assume. Honorable members, this is the last issue. Thank you very much, Ms. Kube. You don't need to go. We're going to be 1 minute, and then we discuss. It's boring. Members, what we heard is present was Honorable Dihale, Father, Honorable Lont, and Honorable Bela. Now, Honorable Lont, we're going to need you and Honorable Dihale particularly to help us with the minute. The minute was distributed to us. It's the presentation that was made on the 13th of April by the Department of Tourism on their strategic plan, annual performance plan and budget. The minute has committee comments, which is the committee welcome presentation. The committee having considered budget tourism, 33 tourism and the annual performance plan of the department, endorsed its approval by the House. Then consideration and adoption of the previous minutes were done. Other than that, it's purely facts that's been shared with us. Can I get somebody's approval to acceptance on the non-general department? Thank you very much, members. The meeting is dismissed.
Okay, so right. Then
you have to ask for the money. Then you have to
ask
for the money. Then you have to
ask
and I sent it to
I'm not going to be able to do it.